Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. I'll try that again. Hey, everybody.
You can do
I'm
it.
Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. Friday, the 23rd of February, on a day when I have to pick up my own name.
Hey, but you got it out there. And I am Kimberly Adams. Got it on the first try. Thank you for joining us on our podcast and on the YouTube live stream. Because it's Friday and the long-suffering, beleaguered Friday, we are doing our normal thing on Friday, which is Economics on Tap, our weekly happy hour episode. So thanks, everybody, for joining.
We will, what will we do? We will check to see what everybody is drinking. We will discuss the news. We'll do a little half full, half empty. I'm kind of winging it here, Kimberly, because my phone is ringing and I'm distracted and I'm, oh my God.
It's okay. Well, I have the chat up in terms of drinks.
Okay.
And I can go through and I see that people are already predicting, Jason, that I will be smug about my landline comments the other day. Yeah. Which I'm not, well, a little bit smart.
A little bit.
But anyway.
Justifiably so. Remind people why in case they missed the news.
So the other day, last week actually, when we were doing half full, half empty, one of the questions was, were we half full or half empty on landlines? And I was among the minority of being half full on having a landline to prepare for the potential zombie apocalypse. And so was our producer, Marissa Cabrera. But it turned out we didn't need to wait for the zombie apocalypse to need landlines. We just needed AT&T and other networks to randomly shut down due to, I guess we still don't fully know why. But they say it's not a cyber attack and it wasn't a solar flare. So anyhow, they were telling people who needed to dial 911 to use a landline. Many people do not have landlines anymore. And therefore, I am vindicated. So, yes, a bit smug. I'll take it.
You totally are. You totally are.
Okay.
1,000%. 1,000%.
All right. But seriously, on to the drinks. What are you drinking first? And then I'll get to the YouTube chat.
I'm having water because I got some things to do later. So just a little agua. Also, I'm a little dehydrated and went running this morning. And I have had five cups of coffee and no other fluids. So, yeah, I'm a little
water is a good choice. I had like two big glasses of water before the show, but now I'm drinking sake that I heated up in the microwave, which is, I know, not the right way to do it, but I'm in the office. But, you know, I'm cold and I wanted something warm, and I picked this up from the sushi place down the street, and I put it in the microwave. All right.
Why are you in the office at 6:30 on a Friday night?
I was working, man. I was working. Got stuff to do.
All right.
Amen. Stuff to do. All right. So what's everybody else drinking? Okay. Let's see. Jennifer Flippin' Pierce is drinking a creamsicle martini. And someone points out that AT&T is saying it was a software update that caused these outages. Yes. And
what is maple bacon shine and screwball whiskey on ice, Larry F? What exactly is that? I don't even know.
Denny and Will McIntyre are drinking a Portlandia Columbia Valley Cab. Craig Hilton, a New Trail Glacier Hazy IPA. Let's see.
Peace Frog 521 is drinking chilled boiled tap water. So there you go. There you go.
Well, at least it's sanitary. Let's see. Yeah. Oh,
Expat Mike in Japan says it's too early to be drinking sake for him. Just wanted to point that out. Give a sake shout
in Japan. Expat Mike, I'm very curious what the take is on microwave and sake in Japan as opposed to, I'm sure it's not good.
Yeah, it will not be good. It will not be good. But I mean, let's watch the chat for that.
Yes. Man. All right. Sarah's got a screwball whiskey. Oh, says screwball whiskey is peanut butter whiskey.
Peanut butter whiskey? What?
Huh.
Expat Mike, never heard of microwaving sake.
Jin Peck says, as long as it's not fish. All right.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah. What's your news? Man.
So there was a really interesting article in the New York Times. I think it was probably yesterday, actually, about Instagram and how it's becoming more and more of a news site. The headline was, "It's Uneasy Rise." And I clicked on it because it was interesting, but I it clicked with me is what I meant to say, because, and I am totally sober, by the way, is because I follow a woman on Instagram named Jessica Yellen. She used to be the CNN White House correspondent, left CNN a number of years ago and started a feed on Instagram called News Not Noise. And she works really hard at differentiating the noise in the news cycle from the actual news and what people know. It's really interesting, and I've been following her for a while. She's quoted in this piece, it should be said, full disclosure. But there's it's really interesting because, and here's the quote straight out of the article. As of last year, 16% of American adults regularly got news on Instagram, which outpaces TikTok, Twitter, and Reddit, and it's up from 8% just 5 years ago. So it's a big jump, more and more people. Here's why it's a challenge, though. This is now a quote from Adam Mosseri, who runs Instagram, for Mark Zuckerberg. Let's remember that Instagram is owned by Facebook, owned by Meta, actually, same company as Facebook. Instagram has stopped recommending, quote, political content across different parts of the app unless users opted into seeing it. The challenge, of course, is that if you have to opt into news to see it, what does that do to your engagement? What does that do to how informed you are as, let's say, a voter if it's political content? Also, there's a whole train of thought on disinformation and misinformation and what it means for that. It's just they're trying to be thoughtful about it. It's a really challenging problem. I recommend the article to you.
Don't people already have to opt in to news on other platforms? If you think about it, you have to turn on your TV and go to the channel.
Turn on
the radio and choose to listen.
But social's different, right?
I mean, yes, social is different, but I'm trying to think about how it's different in this context, in terms of just opting in. What do you mean?
Well, if you follow or have expressed a preference for political news and the algorithm learns what you like, and then Instagram decides to de-emphasize that, right?
That becomes kind of
a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Because that then even if you want to know what's going on, you're kind of being led away from it. But the material that may be more social or less newsy but wrong could be overemphasized. I see your point. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So my news is also a New York Times article sort of around the two-year anniversary of the Russia's invasion of Ukraine and looking at how well our sanctions have worked against Russia, which is to say, not very well. And yes, we've got this brand new round of sanctions after the Russian government obviously killed Alexei Navalny. But we had a lot of sanctions even before that, trying to isolate Russia, trying to undermine its sources of revenue used to fund the war, and they were not super effective. Just to read a little bit of this, to hear the Biden administration officials tell it, Russia has suffered a major strategic failure. But beyond North America and Europe, there's evidence to the contrary. China, India, and Brazil are buying Russian oil in record quantities, feasting on the steep discounts Mr. Putin now offers to countries willing to replace his lost European customers. With those growing economic relationships have come strong diplomatic ties, including with some close U.S. partners. Mr. Putin visited Beijing in October and hosted India's foreign minister in Moscow in late December. A few weeks earlier, Mr. Putin was warmly received in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, where he was greeted with a 21-gun salute and fighter jets overhead trailing smoke in the red, white, and blue of Russia's flag. Russia's influence is also expanding in Africa, according to a new report from the Royal United Services Institute. It goes on and on. It's very interesting to think about how effective sanctions really are, and yet we keep using them because we have not that many tools left, especially when Congress is choosing not to fund another venue of influencing this conflict, which is, you know, paying for weapons and things like that. So I'd seen that article, which made something that I saw on X, which I was on today randomly, which I'm usually not, but I was looking at the terrible news about our colleagues over at WAMU. They had a bunch of layoffs and yet another round of journalism layoffs. But anyway, I was on X and I came across an academic at Stanford University. His name is, he's an assistant professor of economics at the Stern School of Business, I'm sorry, at New York University, and a research affiliate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. I'm probably going to butcher his name. I'm sorry. Abdoulaye Ndiaye. And he's out with and colleagues with a new paper looking at the effectiveness of boycotts, consumer-driven boycotts, as a way to punish a country compared to sanctions. And according to his research, consumer-driven boycotts can actually be more effective in some cases than sanctions at actually causing economic harm to a country. It's very technical and gets into all these different case studies, but the bottom-up method seems to be a little bit more effective than the top-down method, because with sanctions, you tend to kind of eat the cost when you're issuing the sanction, versus with boycotts, it seems to generate a little bit more domestic activity to replace the boycotted product or products within the country doing the boycott. I thought it was very fascinating. I'd never really thought about boycotts versus sanctions and its sort of top-down versus bottom-up approach, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. It's a little bit trickle-down versus, you know, trickle-up-ish, if you want to come with an economic theory. But yeah, it's totally interesting. It makes a lot of sense, too. There was a piece, I was driving home just now, Jackie Northam has a piece on Russian sanctions and how generally ineffective they've been for the reasons you cited, the Brazilians and the Russian, the Brazilians and the Chinese and Indians buying Urals, which is Russian oil, at a discount, you know?
Yeah. I remember on this show we were talking, and I was shocked because Russia actually made more money off oil in the early months of the war than they did, because the global supply went down with the sanctions on Russia, which drove up the price for the oil that Russia could get out. Right. It was wild. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Economics is weird. All right. That's the news. Quick break. And when we come back, Drew Johnstad, half full, half empty. Coming back.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we are back, and we're going to play our wonderful game, Half Full, Half Empty, hosted by our very own Drew Johnstad. Drew, take it away.
All right, this week, Google temporarily removed the news tab from search results for some users. Are you half full or half empty?
Yeah, they're like testing it. They're doing an A-B test with users getting it and users not. And I've noticed, actually, and sometimes when I search on Google, it's not there. It's really annoying. I'm completely empty.
Yeah. I'm definitely empty. It's been a bad week in terms of like journalism and the economics of our industry. It's not looking good. So pretty empty there. Yep. Please give us a more positive topic.
Okay. Are you half full or half empty on going to a steakhouse, not for the steak, but for the vibe?
Where did I hear this story? Where did I hear this story?
This was an interview Kristen did on Monday.
Right. Okay. I was out. That's why I heard part of that story. Anyway, Kimberly, go ahead.
I am going to say half full. I like the vibes. I'll go someplace for the vibes. Why not?
Yeah. I think it's totally fine. Steakhouses are like, you know, a remnant of years gone by, right? But clearly, A, people still go to them, and not always for the steak. I'm half full on that. Sure.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Are you half full or half empty on celebrating Leap Day?
Is this your Leap Day year?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have a 29.
Oh, wow. Just because
the fact
cool,
that he
sure,
didn't even know it was coming.
Yeah.
One day at a time, man.
One day at a time. Yeah, I'm half full on that. I will definitely go with a Leap Day. Sure. Totally.
Is the Leap Day lining up with a solar eclipse? When is that happening?
No. Isn't the solar eclipse like in April
around,
or something?
It's around like opening day or something for the baseball season. So I think it's like early April something.
Oh, okay. My mother was telling me today that she's apparently the like best place to see the solar eclipse is going to be Bloomington, Indiana, where she went a lot as a kid. So she's going with like a bunch of her childhood friends back to Bloomington, Indiana to see the solar eclipse.
Oh, cool.
Folks in the chat say it is April 8th. But to answer the question itself about celebrating Leap Day, half full. You know me. I love a theme. I'll celebrate anything.
Yeah. Totally cool. Also, total eclipses are supposed to be amazeballs. Molly went to the last one. She said it was incredible. Incredible. Oh, yeah. She went to like Oregon or something. Yeah.
Bloomington, Indiana, friends.
There you go.
All right. Are you half full or half empty on Netflix's new adaptation, live action of Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Is this the last one? Is this the poll one?
No.
Oh, all right. No. Okay. Somebody needs to explain to me what Avatar The Last Airbender is.
Ah.
I don't know.
I can help you here. So. Okay.
I knew you would be able to.
Yes. Avatar The Last Airbender was a Nickelodeon series that was sort of one of the more interesting sort of American-originated anime-like series, because a lot of the series that are anime, you see them being developed in Japan and they come over and they get dubbed over or whatever. Avatar was a Nickelodeon series. It was really great. Very interesting. It had this character. I won't give you the whole backstory. It was a good show. And then they had a follow-up series with another Avatar. General principle being that there are people who have special powers to manipulate the elements of the earth. Okay. Right.
Okay.
So having a live action version of this beloved show, I am skeptical because we have not had a great track record of our beloved anime series being converted to live action well. But that's... Oh, Brian Olt brings up something that I had actively suppressed in my memory, which was the M. Night Shyamalan movie of Avatar The Last Airbender, which was a live-action version. And we are going to not talk about it because it was real bad. It was real bad.
Okay. Farther down in the chat is Ben Navratil saying, I think Kai has tuned out. I haven't tuned out. I am, however, having a little cognitive dissonance because I thought this was some spinoff of Avatar, the James Cameron movie that got all the hullabaloo. And you can understand the brand confusion here, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So that is just Avatar versus Avatar, the Last Airbender, because the people who can manipulate these elements are called benders, and the main character is an airbender, although he's special because he can bend all of the elements. Anyway... Well, people tell me that the Cowboy Bebop adaptation was good. I did not hear good things about it, but I haven't seen it. I know that the Ghost Note adaptation did not go well. One Piece live action, some people are saying, is good. I'm skeptical, but you know what? I'm willing to be entertained, and I will probably watch it. And, yeah, so I'm going to be half full because I love the attention on shows that I like, although I would probably rather the money and resources go for new ideas and new things, but Death Note, not Ghost Note, Death Note.
There is no original IP. We're doing anime on Tuesday, right? I saw that somewhere. Right?
Okay. Yes, that's right. Good foreshadow. We're actually doing a deep dive on anime purely for me. Thank you, Kai, for indulging me.
Which is totally fine because I'm going to learn a ton because I know clearly less than nothing about anime if I thought this was a sequel to James Cameron's.
A lot of people think that, though. They're both called Avatar. Yeah, well, anyway, half full. Yeah. What about you?
All right. There you go. I will go with whatever you say. I think, you know, live action remakes are troubling, right? Of classic animated or anime things. So it'll be, my hopes are not high, even though I know nothing about this. I don't know.
And I'm seeing a lot of people here say that Cowboy Bebop was pretty good and that the, what's it called? One Piece live action is doing well. I don't have Netflix, so I haven't seen a lot of these. I gotta go and watch those. So,
oh, Phil Kinesi's giving me a hard time. How did all those kids get out of the lawn, Kai? I don't know, Phil, but I'm getting out of here. All right, next one. Last one, Drew.
Poll.
Last
poll,
one. Right? We got the poll.
So folks who are watching live on YouTube or listening live on YouTube, whatever, if you're in a safe place to weigh in the poll, we would appreciate it. And you can like our live stream while you're at it. Let's do it.
All right. If you're not familiar with Amazon One, it's that little scanner you might have seen at a Whole Foods that links payment information to a scan of your palm. Are you half full or half empty on paying with a wave of your hand?
With all of these new technologies, you know, I'm constantly weighing, is it inevitable or is it sort of just testing it out? You know, I really thought mini discs were going to be a thing. I did. I did. I really did.
And wow.
I know, I took it way back for a minute.
My goodness.
You know? And so you wonder which of these technologies are going to survive. I think it was, I don't know if it was on our show or something else, where someone was talking about how when barcodes were developed, nobody thought that was going to become the standard for everything. Mm-hmm. And then they were. And other systems exist for tracking things, and now not. There are a lot of different ways to share data and share information. You can look at people's eyes. You can look at people's hands. You can facial recognition, and all of it's a privacy nightmare. But is it inevitable? And if so, like, I don't know. Amazon knows so much about us already.
So what do you think? Is this inevitable, or are they just, is it, you know, just another, like flashy, shiny
gimmicky
object?
Thing?
That's the question. All right, we got 184 votes in the poll. That's plenty. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to say half empty. I think that so many of these technologies are advancing so rapidly that a wave of the hand is not going to be so much more efficient than waving a card or waving a fob. And the privacy trade-off, you know, I don't know that a lot of people are going to get on board. And how much easier is that than something else? But who knows? What do you think?
I don't have very many privacy concerns, because I don't know why. I just don't. I just don't think it's going to, I think the execution's going to be flawed here, and it's going to be a while before this is a viable technology, and there are going to be different ways to do it. So I don't think a scan of your palm is going to be it. So on this specific thing, I'm half empty. I think contactless payment, like actual genuine contactless payment, is coming. It's only a question of when, and then I'll be half full on that. You know, the poll, by the way, is half empty, 84% of you on almost 200 votes, half full, 15. So, you know, there are some privacy concerns out there amongst our listeners.
Yeah, with good reason.
Totally.
All right.
Totally.
So we're done.
There we go. We're done. That's it for us today. We are back on Monday, and then the deep dive with anime on Tuesday. In the meanwhile, questions, comments, you know how to do it. Voicemail is 508-UB-SMART. Email is makemesmart@marketplace.org, and that's how you get a hold of us.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe, and our intern is Talia Manchaka.
The team behind our Friday game, which is called Half Full, Half Empty, is Emily McCune and Antoinette Brock. Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on demand.
Yes.
And there we go.
And I'm going to get out of the office.
Yeah, I don't. That's 6 days late.
I got a lot done, though. I accomplished the goals that I set for myself for today, and I feel good about it.
There you go. There you go.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.